Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Gronkowski, do you know what Gronkowski, by him just being so always wanting to redo his contract and never actually testing, like
free
using
agency.
His leverage,
yeah.
He hurt other tight ends. Because Gronk, you have to like you understand how many average or like slightly above average wide receivers made more money than Rob Gronkowski. Rob Gronkowski would have been the person that set the market. Sean and I are telling you this. You're just basically continuing our conversation from the break because I saw something up on the TV that said should Pat Mahomes give the Chiefs a discount with his next contract?
Why the hell would he do that?
Well, because Tom Brady gave his teams discounts. So Tom Brady, likewise, because he's a saint.
Yeah,
because,
well, I've seen Patrick Mahomes' girlfriend. She's not a Brazilian supermodel that makes $1 billion a year.
How much of that? What if I know it's almost too convenient to say, but how much of Tom Brady's wife being ultra rich also made it just that much easier for him to say, like, what's $1 million here or there?
I would say very easy.
Yeah.
Very easy. I don't say easy. It's $1 million or $5 million or whatever it is, but it's less painful.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Because it's always easy from the outside to say, like, well, you're so rich already. What's a few $1 million? But generally, people that get rich and stay rich, that's the key part, the staying rich.
Staying rich.
It's really hard to get rich, even harder to stay rich.
Right.
Those are the people that tend to just actually still care about the several $1 million here or there.
That's right.
That's why I worry so much about boxers sometimes.
Like,
no matter how much money they're making, like, no, it doesn't. You're not going to be able to resell that watch for $5 million.
Floyd Mayweather is texting out or tweeting out pictures of bets that he has for $250,000 on a random football game in week 10.
With Floyd, I feel like with Floyd, I wonder how much of it is just that part is even still calculated.
Yeah.
You know? I feel like Floyd actually probably has a certain number of manageable gambling losses that he views as advertising expenses.
Brand management.
You know?
Yeah. We're getting people texting in things that make them feel like less of a man in the spirit of Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown beat up a mover earlier this week that was moving his stuff, which got Seth and I talking about the fact that anytime our stuff has been moved before, you know, you and I have both moved several times, that we feel like less of a man watching these more studly men pick up our heavy furniture and move them. And we're like, oh, right over there.
We're like watching from our bedroom.
Peering out.
with the curtains just barely open until they come to take the curtains down for us.
Right. So people are texting in what makes them feel like less of a man. Getting your oil changed is a big one.
That doesn't bother me at all because I know how to change my oil, and it's just it's frankly a pain in the. It's so much easier if I had a lift in my garage and I could do it standing up and everything. I'd be like, all right, yeah, I definitely did it. But I'm paying somebody because they have the equipment where they can just walk down into that little cave and do it themselves much easier than me. It's a convenience. That doesn't make me feel like less of a man.
This is a good one because I can relate to this one.
Yeah.
Mounting a TV on the wall.
Yeah.
Amy's dad, every time we've moved, Amy's dad, who's very handy, he comes over and mounts the TV on the wall. And he actually comes over and does a lot of the stuff. I have one for you.
Okay.
How about
your future father-in-law coming over to do anything for you?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I have another one that he does. He puts up our Christmas lights on our house. Like, gets out the ladder, puts them on the roof, and I'm down there like, that one over. I'm like down there supervising and directing traffic, and I feel like a complete heel.
Sean,
they listen, so they know right now.
Wait a second, though. I have to bring this up then. Because now I know something about you.
What?
When we went out and we were doing our community service for the station the other day, and we were painting the house, the old lady's house. Everybody's out, like, they're painting trim. Other people are carrying trash from the backyard to the front yard and everything.
Right.
Sean is holding court, just telling stories all around. That was your job that day, was just standing around telling stories. The sales guys are over and you're telling funny stories. Then you went over and you were entertaining the accounting people for a while.
It's the happiest charity event we ever had.
I'm looking there. I'm drenched from head to toe in sweat, trying to get the trim work right. And I'm looking over at you and you're just... You're you got a big old grin on your
just
face.
Trying to do what I do best.
Eating a donut, waiting for lunch to show up.
Donuts were delicious.
So you've
carried that around with you for a long time.
I wasn't put out by it or anything. I felt like that's your gift in life.
Somewhere Amy's dad is somewhere. He's like, I want to go drinking with Seth right now.
Yeah. Somebody else has a father-in-law one. He says, my father-in-law never letting me pay for dinner or splitting a bill with my brother-in-laws, and they all drop those heavy-weighted platinum cards on the table. Yeah, what point? Sometimes that becomes an entrenched family dynamic. At some point, you're gonna have to tell your father before the dinner, your father-in-law. So you're like,
it's
hey,
on us.
Jim, I got this tonight. Yeah. Let me do this for you, Jim. I appreciate so much of it. Don't make a big deal out of it or whatever.
Yep.
Now, Tony Soprano always felt like it was his. He got really upset when Meadows' boyfriend tried to pick up the tab.
Finn.
He got pissed about
it. Yeah, Finn DiTrolio. Yeah.
Finn did not belong in that family.
He did not at all. Not even one tiny
waspy
bit.
Little punk.
Yep. So keep texting. Keep texting those in.
I know him when I see him because I am one.
713-572-4610. Things that make you feel like less of a man. So Jim Crane was at the Houston Sports Awards the other night. We caught up with him for a few minutes on the show on Tuesday afternoon.
It makes me feel like less of a man when my best friend Ted... I can't say it. Never mind.
Back to Jim Crane.
Does things with my wife. I think that's it. Is that a Ted Johnson
joke? I don't know. So Jim Crane met with the media at the Houston Sports Awards, and he told the Houston fans, you are going to hear something from the players in spring training.
The players have been beaten up a little bit, and I think, you know, they've been all spread out. I saw some of the things yesterday on with the guys interviewed. They're just kind of getting some advice to take it easy. When we get down to spring training, we'll all get them together, and they'll come out with a strong statement as a team, and I think, you know, apologize for what happened, and we'll move forward.
All right, so that was Jim Crane, and that's the first we've heard that there is a plan for the players to apologize. Seth, they caught a lot of heat the other day, mostly Bregman and Altuve, because they're the most prominent guys who have at least spoken, period, about this thing. There's a lot of hand-wringing from people over the fact that they're not showing any remorse, nor are they apologizing to anybody.
Yeah, well, and I think at least part of this and where some of the questions come up is that there is that sometimes people use the, hey, there's an investigation going on as kind of an excuse not to talk when really there is no reason for the investigation to hold it up. I don't know if that's valid here or not. I think the more likely reason, and Jim Crane stated this, was that everybody was all apart. These guys aren't all in the same geographic location. And if you're gonna start issuing apologies kind of ad hoc and from one to the next, there's a chance for there to be more drama. I like the idea of them all getting together and kind of coming up uniformly with something that they should say to address all of this. I would imagine, too, and this is the hard part, there's the public image of all this, and then there's how the guys feel in their heart, which is probably, I'm guessing, and also surmising from other things, that there's a certain... Well, look, yeah, we did this, but let me remind you that other teams are not innocent in this.
That's right.
And so I think they probably feel singled out, you know? And look, it's they did it. They got to account for it. But then also, there's the fact that other teams that did it, but then also, okay, there's individuals on the Astros that may have barely participated. There are some individuals that didn't participate at all that were on the team in 2017. Are they supposed to come out and apologize? Is he supposed to, you know?
And that's my question, is what is this apology going to look like? Yeah. Jim Crane's word is apology. He said there will be an apology when the players are together. So is this some sort of group apology where they're all standing there? Is it a statement that comes from the team on behalf of all of the players? If it's an apology that's an apology where they all stand up and there's a group apology, is there a certain player that reads the apology or makes the statement? Are they going to answer questions? Is it a media session?
Yeah.
I'll tell you this right now. I don't want to be the player that's going to read this apology, because that is the one person who will then be pointed to as, well, I guess that guy was for sure. Like, imagine they make Alex Bregman read the apology.
Right.
What's the first thing people are going to think? Well, for sure he did it. I mean, he read the damn apology.
Yeah, no, and all these clowns everywhere.
I'm not saying it's fair, but that's what they'll
already,
do.
Because it's already, no, in terms of the public opinion, I look around and I see comments by various, not just... And I'm saying it's not just fans, it's writers as well, that lump 2019 into 2017. But there was an investigation that found no evidence of wrongdoing in 2019. And this is when Major League Baseball had installed observers in the video room, observers in the dugouts during the playoffs. All of this has happened. And people are acting like there's no difference between 2017 and 2019. That part, I kind of like, because there are a lot of people out there that somehow have convinced themselves that Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve and all these guys aren't even good baseball players. They ignore their road splits, ignore all these things, and they think that all of a sudden these guys are going to hit 200 this year. So it's going to be fun to watch that unfold over the course of the season, because there are a lot of morons out there that are going to be vastly disappointed by the fact that, oh, wow, yeah, Alex Bregman, who was awesome on the road without any help, obviously, at any point, including 2019 when there wasn't any help at home, right, he's still awesome.
Right, and that's a great point. Like, people forget, Jose Altuve hit 330 every year up through 2017, yeah, and was still hitting very, very well in 2017.
He's been well established, his road splits were better in 2017 than at home. It just, there's not, there's people that are dumb enough out there that think, honestly, that, like, the only reason any of these guys are good was because there was some tub thumping going on from time to time.
Right.
Back in 2017.
Yep.
It's going to be fun to watch that. I'm taking notes. I'm keeping receipts from all this.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing, too, the other thing that's annoyed me about all this is where I feel like baseball writers who typically, I'll say baseball writers are usually very meticulous about things. It's a game of statistics.
Yeah.
It's a game of history. And I read this article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday that says, hey, whoa, it turns out that the players had been granted immunity by testifying. Yeah, we've known that for 2 weeks, you clown.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, like, what the hell? How are you acting like this is breaking news? We've known this. Nobody's even paying attention to the actual facts of the case.
Seth, I was reading that article in the Wall Street Journal, and I was questioning myself. I'm like, they said this in 2017.
Right.
When they issued the memo, they said out front, like, the players will not be, when they issued the warning in 2017, they said the people who will be punished will be management, not the players. Like, this has been going back to the time that they issued the edict on this.
And we had Jim Callis on the day after the report, and he was talking about how the players had been granted immunity is not the right word, but that they weren't going to be punished as long as they cooperated with the report.
Here's my solution with the apology is, if we don't want specific players who are still with the team to get up there and apologize, they should just cut Evan Gattis a check for like $100,000, bring him back for a day, and let him read the apology. Mm-hmm. Since he's the one where the John Boy video is out there of him hearing the garbage can banging, and he's out of baseball now anyways, let's let Gattis apologize on behalf of the 2017 Astros.
Oh, and somebody points out, you're right, Seth, and some of those dumb people happen to be major league pitchers. And it's true, like, Marcus Stroman is acting like any struggles he had versus the Astros must have been because the Astros were cheating and whatnot. There's a lot of pitchers out there that think, oh, and this is the other weird thing about some of these writers from various locales that somehow think that because other Major League Baseball players heard the rumors about the buzzers, that that's somehow corroborating evidence or something. Like, heard the same rumors I did? Like, oh, yeah, that's how rumors work, dumbasses.
Right, that's right.
That's the same way when somebody says that Jim slept with Sally in the office. Just because 8 other people heard the rumor doesn't mean that those two got busy with each other.
Good for
Jim.
Even
though they probably did, because Jim's like a goat.
Mike Fiers should read the apology, someone said. How great would that be?
That would be awesome. I'd like, on behalf of the 2017 Astros,
Mike Fiers,
I'd like to apologize for everything we did.
That is great. I like this one. We would like to apologize for Yankee fans being a bunch of whining bitches. Mm. That's like one of those, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I didn't beat the crap out of you a lot sooner, that kind of thing. So, all right, so the Astros will be issuing an apology, coming to a spring training site near you. Let's do some headlines. Rockets win last night. We haven't been able to say that in a long, long time. The Rockets beat the Denver Nuggets last night, a depleted Denver Nuggets team.
Well, we'd only been able to say it once out of the last 6 games.
Yeah, but 4 games in a row, we haven't been able to say it. It feels good to say it. Rockets win, especially as they get ready to embark on a road trip to essentially take on the entire Northwest Division for the most part. They're going to Portland. They're going to Minnesota. They're going to play Denver again here in Denver. Shortly, Utah as well. So not an easy road trip they've got coming up. So they needed this win last night. Russell Westbrook was tremendous again last night. He was 2 assists away from a triple-double. He's he's gotten his game straightened out. Of all the things that are wrong with the Rockets right now, and there are still some things that are wrong with this team, Russell Westbrook is not one of them. In my favorite stat for Russell Westbrook, Seth, 0 for 0 from three-point range.
Yeah, I think one of the hard things that's been hard to process over the last couple of weeks is that it's just been flat-out Harden underperforming, yeah. You know, and just looking so out of sorts. So it's nice to see him really get back into his flow last night. And I think the big thing is that, look, Eric Gordon, when Eric Gordon is hitting his threes and Eric Gordon is doing more of what we expect out of him, he's that classic glue guy. He ties everything else together. Yeah. You can have two great players, but on any given night, you can't depend on both of those guys being great, obviously. Eric Gordon's one of the guys that fills in the gaps, and he hadn't been really doing that as of late. Last night, it felt good to be at that game.
Yeah.
Everything felt right. It was good to watch Jokic gasping for air as he tried to follow Capella up and down the court, too.
Yeah, man. He's not in good shape.
I know. He had a flop early on. It was one of the most unartful flops I've ever seen, and it worked. It was so unethical, because we're used to seeing artistry with our flops here,
yes,
especially on the three-pointers.
Yeah, we've got some of the best in the business.
I found myself disgusted that I had even witnessed that in person. I felt dirty, Jokic trying to flop.
Yeah, it was tough to watch. In other action last night, the New Orleans Pelicans fans got to experience the debut of Zion Williamson. Seth, on the hype meter, Zion Williamson coming into the NBA is the most hyped rookie since ... Is it LeBron? Is he the most hyped NBA rookie since LeBron? The suits at ESPN have been saying that the three players that people are talking most about right now, I don't know how they measure this, if it's social media or if it's just them trying to create a narrative to market Zion to all of us at ESPN, but LeBron, yeah. Steph Curry, Zion Williamson.
It's interesting because Lonzo Ball clearly, obviously, was never in the same category as Zion Williamson in terms of the type of player he's going to be. But in terms of actual hype, I feel like Lonzo might be up there just because they were so good at generating and creating hype.
True.
So it depends, I guess, on how you label
hype. How about deserved hype?
Deserved hype, Zion Williamson. Yes, yeah. that might be it.
And he scored 22 points in 18 minutes last night, and he had a stretch of about 3 minutes of basketball where he knocked down 4 three-pointers. I don't know if this is what they're looking for from Zion Williamson. People are going crazy over this debut, and there's part of me that's like, okay, I mean, like, are we expecting Zion to all of a sudden be Steph Curry and he's going to be raining threes? It was a cool debut. His numbers were big for only playing 18 minutes. Good for New Orleans.
I'm looking at an article from 2010 about the most hyped players to enter the NBA in the last 10 years.
Okay.
So this is interesting. Go back to 2010. Number one was Shaquille O'Neal.
Yep.
Number two was LeBron James.
Yep.
Number three was Tim Duncan.
Tim Duncan.
Can you guess who number four would have been?
Oh, Greg Oden. Yeah. He was
but number five is the big shocker.
Is that Kwame Brown?
It is Kwame Brown.
Oh my
God!
Yeah. All right.
So Zion Williamson definitely more hyped than Kwame Brown.
Nothing is guaranteed. For the record, I don't know that Zion's going to live up to the hype. I think he's a good player. I just don't know about that body type, man. He's a little heavy. More headlines here. Justin Reed, as it turns out, played the entire 2019 season with a torn labrum in his shoulder. He tweeted about it yesterday. He said, the news is out there. Yes, I played hurt the entire 2019 season. He's going to get surgery on the shoulder here shortly. Seth, he's going to get surgery on this torn labrum.
Yeah.
You've had a torn labrum. Is this going to be an ongoing thing, or will the surgery pretty much put this thing to bed?
It hopefully shouldn't be an ongoing thing. Now, I had to do it 2 years in a row because the first injury didn't stick, but we kind of tried something more less invasive and more quote-unquote revolutionary at the time, and it turned out to be just a bad process.
Okay.
So the second time I had it, because I had I kept dislocating my shoulder 1 year. So they did a pretty extreme procedure. It was my left arm, and it worked. I've never had an issue since then. But I couldn't – if I were left-handed, I wouldn't be able to throw real well or anything.
Right.
But Justin Reed doesn't need to throw the football. So if whatever they need to do, I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah.
One of our listeners weighed in on this, and he reminded me of what it's like to have these issues that – Justin Reed had to deal with all this year. For one, the frustrating thing about a torn labrum is you might go through an entire game, you might work out a few times, and your shoulder actually feels pretty good. Then you go to reach for the Cheerios box on the top shelf, and you sublux your shoulder.
Right.
It's out of nowhere, these random weird movements, including in a football game, like maybe reaching up for an interception or something,
yeah.
All of a sudden you're in extreme pain.
Yeah.
So he had to play the entire season, though, that at any given moment, sometimes not even the big hits, but the little movements, like trying to reach for a ball or something, is going to put him in extreme pain.
Probably the two most memorable plays he had this year involved him using the shoulder.
Yeah.
Stopping Leonard Fournette at the goal line on that two-point conversion in week two, and then the pass breakup that Whitney Mercilus turned into an interception in week 15.
And one of the things is actually laying your shoulder in there and jarring somebody with it, that's not necessarily the thing that's going to aggravate it as much as anytime you're reaching out away from your body.
You're moving the ball in socket.
Yeah, which he has to do a lot of, though, sure. too. I mean, he's a tough kid.
Yeah.
He's one of those kids that comes into the league a veteran player.
Yes.
The other guy that I would think of like that is D'Amico Ryans.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I had to call D'Amico Ryans sir when he was a rookie. I was in my 10th year.
Made you feel like a little kid.
Yeah.
Eli Manning is retiring, which will touch off 5 years of really fun debate over whether Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer or not. Seth, I don't think Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer. I don't know that I ever got a firm yes or no from you other than the fact that I think you and I share a lot of the same thoughts on this. But if you were a Hall of Fame voter, if John McClain brought you to Canton with him to be part of that group that picks the Hall of Fame class every year, would you arrive at a point where Eli Manning, not first ballot, not fifth ballot, any ballot,
I'd say a lot of you are going to get up there and say, well, look, he wasn't a Hall of Fame player except that he had two Super Bowls. And, well, heck, we put Terry Bradshaw in there based mostly on his Super Bowls more than how good of a quarterback he is. To which I say, all right, how about maybe you sleep with somebody you shouldn't have slept with every now and then. Does that mean you marry him? Hell no. So just because we slept with Terry Bradshaw doesn't mean we need to sleep with Eli Manning.
This is the presentation you
were not going to marry Eli Manning because we slept with Terry Bradshaw. Yeah.
So that's a no?
Your lapses in judgment earlier on don't mean that later on you need to be held to those same lapses in judgment.
I got you. So Eli,
Sean, if I held you to your sexual history, what time is it? 7:53. Yeah, we're not supposed to talk about this stuff anyway.
So anyways, Manning's retiring Friday. Tomorrow's the press conference.
I hate though is people act like if you say that somebody isn't in the Hall of Fame, they shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. Right. They act like you're saying he sucks. Like, no, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying he's not nearly as good as those other Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
Where do you put Philip Rivers in the Eli Manning pecking order? Do you like Philip Rivers more or less as a quarterback than Eli Manning?
I like him a lot better as a quarterback than
Philip
Eli
Rivers?
Manning. Yeah.
Okay.
And he's not a Hall of Famer, by the way.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be either. Have you seen this last one in headlines here? This is a name I don't know is going to be familiar with most of our audience, but it's a fascinating story. One of our peers, former peers, Craig Carton, former employee of the same company we are employees of, Entercom. WFAN up in New York is the sports talk station up in New York. Craig Carton was one of the morning hosts with Boomer Esiason.
Yeah.
So their version of Payne and Pendergast at one time was Boomer and Carton. Craig Carton, as it turns out, was living a double life.
Right.
Where he was gambling millions and millions and millions of dollars. He had people, you know, chasing him for money. He'd go to Atlantic City.
This was a couple years ago that it was found out, and he lost his job, 2 years ago? No, it was in the Houston Super Bowl, wasn't it, right around that time?
It was right around that time, so 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
As it turns out, he was funding his gambling addiction by scamming people. He had a ticket scam going on and just swindled people out of millions and millions of dollars. He recently went to prison. He's gone away now for a few years at least. They're going to be creating a documentary about his life. I believe HBO is going to be, it's HBO, because Boomer Esiason has said he's been interviewed for it.
Yeah.
So they're going to be doing a documentary on Craig Carton's life. I think ultimately this is going to be like that Mike and the Mad Dog 30 for 30, where people in the Northeast are much more interested in this.
Yeah.
How intrigued are you by a Craig Carton documentary? Sports talk host who got caught up in the glitz and glamour of Ponzi schemes and ticket schemes and million-dollar gambling
bets. It's a really interesting story. I guess it'll depend on how well it's done.
Right.
But because you're right, it's not – he's a regional celebrity.
Yeah,
everybody – I remember people in sports media were going crazy for that 30 for 30 on Mike and the Mad Dog, and it got the worst ratings a 30 for 30's ever gotten. It's still sometimes people in New York have a hard time understanding that it's a niche – when you talk about nationally, you're still a niche if you're just talking about something that's going on in that city.
Is there a particular Houston media personality whose life would make a good documentary that people in Houston would be interested in? I'm thinking off the cuff here.
I think Josh Innes would be fascinating, actually. Josh is an interesting human being. Yeah. He's got an interesting upbringing and everything. I should think Josh Innes. Who else? As far as Bob Allen would be a fun one.
Bob Allen was the one I was thinking.
Bob Allen was like a much more intelligent Ron Burgundy.
Yeah.
Like you think about like what it was like in the 70s and 80s being the local the local sports guy on local television and everything in a pretty big city, but Houston was like a growing city, much like San Diego in the 70s. That might have been close to a more dignified Ron Burgundy type story.
Bob Allen was the one I was thinking of.
You know, we should have done a bunch of interviews with Bob after, because Bob was a good storyteller too. I don't know how many stories he would have told, but he had some really, really good stories. Tim Melton too. Tim Melton told some stories about at one of his memorial services, he told a few hilarious stories about Bob.
Well, they like McClain, actually, came up in a time where there wasn't nearly the wall between media and players as there is now.
Yeah, but it wasn't like, at the same time, it's interesting, there was more journalistic integrity, I think. And they might have seen players out and everything, but there was more. There were classically trained journalists to where they felt like, oh, we got to get two sources for everything. We've got to maintain a certain barrier between. But because of that, the relationship was different. Those guys kept stories off the record a lot more. When it came to something like scandalous in a personal life, they weren't going to touch it. Yeah. And it was because that was just kind of the... We're going to cover sports, and that's what we're here to do, is cover sports. So they have a lot of really good stories about athletes that never saw the light of day because they just kind of felt like that's not our purview. If the gossip columnist wants to write about it, then so be it. Now everything's just gone.
They were bigger stars back then too, locally. Yeah. And I think the big reason why was that cable television hadn't proliferated to the point that it has now.
Yeah.
There were four channels. So you got your news.
There was no blogging or YouTube
right.
or anything
there was,
like that.
There was no they cornered the market on being the place to go to get your news.
Yeah,
you know, and so they were bigger celebrities back then too. So they, I think, bigger celebrities probably inherently have more interesting stories.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.